We are discussing the Jnana Yoga of Swami Vivekananda. The first chapter was the necessity of religion. And this chapter, second chapter, is the real nature of man. In our last class, Swamiji had cited one story which is universally prevalent, the story of the deluge. And he had given a most wonderful new inner significance of what this deluge really is. Before we go into the details, we need to know this story. Vaguely, we do know this story. There was a terrible flood all over the world. The whole world, every creature was in danger of dying. If you read the Bible, then Noah was commanded, forewarned by God, you build an ark and gather the seeds of every species on earth. And this ark alone will float. Everything else will be destroyed. And when the flood subsides, then the seeds of these, they will again flourish and the whole earth will be back. Now, in Hindu mythology, this concept of deluge has attained a huge proportion, and a whole book has been written on the significance, giving varied details. This book is known as Matsya Purana. It is a most wonderful Purana. God incarnated as a fish. And symbolically, what does it really mean? We know this story, and it is a historical fact that everywhere, so many cities had been submerged because of the rising of the sea levels. That's a fact, and this story is prevalent in every nation, every culture. But how few had given thought what it really means? Is it just a historical fact? When I was studying this particular chapter, suddenly the thought struck me that Swamiji was giving a talk in London about the real nature of man. And why does he suddenly bring this story of deluge? In our last class, we briefly mentioned what were the symbolism, significance, spiritual significance, that there comes a time universally when most people do not voluntarily, consciously turn to God. The only way is to destroy the instruments which have been responsible. Remember, man cannot be destroyed. In fact, according to Hindu philosophy, Vedanta philosophy, nothing can be destroyed. Even the body cannot be destroyed. After all, the body is composed of what? Five elements. And what is death? Going back to the constituent elements, simply that. We are only clinging to the manifestation of these five elements in a particularized way, and we are worried that destruction comes. For us, you know, every previous night is a destruction, because we arise as a new person. Deep sleep is a destruction. For that matter, the gap in between two thoughts is nothing but destruction. But do we die? Next morning we get up. Next thought will emphasize our own existence. So also, death is only a prelude to future life. This is a well-known, well-believed theory in Hinduism. Bhagavad Gita, Vasamsa jirnani yatha vihaya navani grihnati aparani. Just as a man easily, happily discards worn out useless dress and puts on a new dress, so also death is nothing but to throw out the useless in the sense, it doesn't mean it is old, doesn't mean it is deceased. It means it cannot serve the purpose for which we have taken this body any longer. What we call in Sanskrit, our karma bhoga is exhausted. In this birth, this body can serve no further. Therefore, automatically the expiry date comes and then the body is given up only to assume a new instrument. This teaching makes significance only when we realize that body and mind is not our nature, but they are our instruments. Nature has given us for realizing, for knowing who we really are. Coming back to this story, let me give in a little more detail. There was a great soul called Manu, and always these Hindu mythologies, they emphasize the nature of holy life, spiritual life. This Manu was doing great austerity. Austerity means purity. Purity means to know who we really are. The story goes, one day he went to take bath in a small pond, and there was a small minnow, and then it was struggling. Manu took pity upon it, and in his water pot, he took up the minnow and put it. What a wonderful thing, surprising thing. By next morning, that minnow had grown to the volume of the water pot. Then he took a bigger pot and put in it. Next morning, only one day, and it has filled up this one. Then he put it in a pond, and that fish had become as big as the pond. Then he put it in a river, and it became as big as the river. Then there was only one option, and it was put in a sea. Suddenly, the fish reveals itself. I am the divine Lord. I am the creator. Now, you build a big boat. Take the seeds of every creature here and put it in the boat. Because in 1 week, the whole earth will be flooded with water. A great flood will come. Everything will be destroyed. Similar story like Noah's Ark. But in that huge deluge, who is going to safely take the boat across? So, says, you tie, the fish was talking to the Manu. You tie me to the boat, I will take it safely until the floods recede, and again the whole earth will be populated by this. Vesu drowned this story in a great elaboration, Matsya Purana, a great mythology. One of the 36 Puranas. You know, Hindu mythologies, there are 36. 18 called Mahapuranas, great Puranas, and 18 are called Upapuranas, smaller Puranas. These Puranas are again subdivided into 3 parts. Those who eulogize Vishnu, those who eulogize Devi, and those who eulogize Shiva. An example, Bhagavatam, from which the title of the Gospel of Sri Ramakrishna in Bengali has been taken, Kathamritam. It is belongs to the Lord Vishnu. Harivamsa is another one. Vishnu Purana is another one. Now, about the Devi, there is one Bhagavatam. It is called Devi Bhagavatam. And there are many other Puranas belonging to the Devi cult or religious sect. Then there is Shiva Purana, Skanda Purana, Linga Purana. It is in the Skanda Purana that we get the greatness of Varanasi. Coming back to our story, every Purana is nothing but formulating the Vedic teachings in a form that is easily accessible for us, often illustrated by inspiring stories of great sages, saints, etc. That's why all this secondary literature is called Smriti. Smriti means based upon the hearing these people had from, as distinguished from realized souls who as if heard the great truths, rishis, and their realizations come to be known as Shruti. Shruti means, you know, I want to explain it a little bit because so much of misunderstanding. When I ask you, did you hear about this? You say, no, I have not heard about it. Then you are assuming that somebody spoke and then we heard it. This is what the experience from the ear, the sense organ called hearing capacity, ears. Now, when a person had experienced the highest truth, what is the experience? Does he see it? Does he hear it? Does he taste it? Does he smell it? Does he touch it? Every one of us know the 5 sense organs are completely useless beyond a small limitation.
even the smallest limited. You cannot describe really anything accurately unless the other person already knows about it. You can only give hints about it. Any great saint, when he makes his mind very pure, automatically a flood of light, the light of the Atman, comes into his purview. That means he becomes one with the experience. He doesn't experience it, he becomes the experiencer without the experience. Now, his mind afterwards comes down. So he has that experience. He knows what it is. It is a wonderful experience. But how does he express it when he has to convey it to other people? And that becomes a very difficult thing. Therefore, we say, as if this person heard it. Do you hear God? When God appears before us, do you see or do you hear? You neither see, you neither hear. But what happens? This word seeing is an example. So do you see this beautiful table here? Yes. Do you see what I mean? Yes, yes, I see what you mean. Here the meaning of the word see means what? Understanding. The whole understanding changes. That is what they mean by Shruti heard. Do not ever mistake it. Somebody thunders and then the person, a great sage, hears it. No, he experiences it. But when it comes to the expression to other person, put it in human language, we use the word heard. That's why there is a difference between Shruti and Smriti. Shruti means it is direct experience. But when the person has to recollect it, even when we recollect it, we talk to ourselves. We recollect it. But when we have to express it, either we write about it or we speak about it. That is called Shruti. And they, out of compassion, convey about God, about other life, about spiritual life, about the pitfalls of our worldly life, etc., to their disciples through the Guru-Sishya tradition, Sampradaya. Their experience comes to us. For example, we all say God exists. How did you know? I don't know. My guru told me. How does your guru know? His guru told me. How does his guru know? Because Sri Ramakrishna told him. But the idea is, Sri Ramakrishna spoke to Swami Vivekananda. Yes, I have seen God and you can also see God. Then Swami Vivekananda experienced it. Yes, I have seen God. Then he conveyed it to his disciples. So his disciples are conveying to their disciples. This is what is called Smriti. It is based upon somebody else's experience. But when we ourselves experience it through spiritual practice, it doesn't remain Smriti. It remains Shruti, direct experience, another name. Now these Puranas, mythologies, they're called Puranas in Sanskrit language. They embody the same truths like the Vedas, but they put it in what we call simple language. One person had composed on Sri Ramakrishna, Eshe Che Nutan Manush. There he says, Sharal Kothai Shikale. Lord, you have conveyed the highest truths in the simplest possible words. But why can't we say that the Upanishads are conveying that truth? Yes, Upanishads, you know what they say? Sir, teach me about the reality. Neti, neti. Not this, not this. This is the highest expression. What do you understand by neti, neti? Not this, not this. It is impossible. So, everything that is based upon second-hand experience, what we call second-hand experience, is called Smriti, secondary scripture. They are human-made. Shrutis are not human-made. They are discoveries. But Smritis are man-made. He writes, he speaks, etc. Now, Matsya Purana details this one. Coming back, in short, the whole world has been what is called regenerated. What is the idea? There was a great deluge and it practically made everything into the form of seed. And the seed again regenerated. This is the cycle that is going on all over the world in every living creature. Simple example, here is a mango tree and it produces a seed. The seed produces a mango tree. Mango tree produces a seed. The chicken produces egg. Egg produces chicken. Why these two examples? I say, so one is for the non-vegetarians, another is for the vegetarians. What is the idea? Swamiji had brought in regeneration. Man cannot be destroyed. No living creature can be destroyed. No non-living creature can be destroyed. Nothing can be destroyed. But everything evolves. That is the idea Swamiji brings here. Story of deluge, I am quoting from Swamiji. Side by side with this, we find the story of the deluge everywhere. The story itself is a proof that this present age is held to be a corruption of a former age by every religion. It went on becoming more and more corrupt until the deluge swept away a large portion of mankind. And again, the ascending series began. It's going up slowly again to reach once more that early state of purity. You are all aware of the story of the deluge in the Old Testament. To return to mythology, behind all these stories, we find one idea standing supreme. What Swamiji's words? What is that one idea? That man is a degeneration of what he was. This is a most marvelous idea, and Swamiji's next progression. These are all, you know, Swamiji's talks are beautiful ideas beginning with a seed form and gradually developing into more and more and more rational, meaningful thought until he takes us to the highest peak. What is the title of the second chapter? The Real Nature of Man. Let us recollect it. What is the symbolism of deluge? Deluge is destruction of all that is impure so that we can regain the knowledge of our true identity, who we really are. In fact, as I mentioned earlier, the whole meaning of life is from the beginning of creation and until the end of creation. It is to discover who we really are. If anyone asks any one of us, what is your real goal in life, you can give a short answer. To know who I am. There is a very nice joke, you know, psychiatrist jokes. Two psychiatrists, when they meet in New York City early in the morning, do you know how they greet each other? They say, "You are fine, how am I?" Because we know about everybody else, but we do not know about ourselves. But it is a wrong statement. It is not a correct statement. If I do not know who I am, I will never know who you are or what anything else. If I am a deluded person, if that is my idea of myself, but I never say I am deluded. What I say, you know, everybody else is deluded excepting me. If I am deluded, I also identify the whole universe as only deluded. Swamiji is coming to this beautiful symbolism. The whole evolution has only one goal, because life is evolving. What is it? Man is trying to become what he really is. And until he reaches that state, the travel, the journey will never stop. Just now, I recollected something very wonderful with regard to this. There is a beautiful incident in the Gospel of Sri Ramakrishna. Sri Ramakrishna and M were talking. Ramakrishna asked M, "Do you have any dreams?" And then he narrates, "Yes, sir. Few days back, I had this dream. I was wanting to go to another place, faraway place, but I had to travel by a boat. I went to the seashore and no boat is plying. Many people want to go, but no boats are available because there is terrible waves and other things. And I was wondering, how am I going to go to my destination?" Suddenly, I saw an old Brahmin very easily, just almost running. Then I asked, "Sir, where are you going?" And he replied, M is narrating, "Where are you going?" "I am going to Bhavanipur." "And how are you going?" "Because there is no boat." He says, no, "there is a beautiful bridge just underneath the water. You can't see it. And, sir, I also want to go there only. Let me follow you. And then Sri Ramakrishna, that old Brahmin, was telling, in the dream, you know, you cannot walk with me because I walk very fast. But observe how I am walking and follow my footsteps. Then Sri Ramakrishna says, I am getting horripilations. You need a guru. So immediately you get initiated by a guru. What was Sri Ramakrishna saying? Get initiated. From whom? If the hint is not taken indirectly, it has to be given directly. Say, who was M's guru? Sri Ramakrishna only. What is the symbolism of this? Similar to this, that's why in Hindu Vedantic literature, this world is often compared to what? To a ocean. Bhavasagara tarana karanahe. And guru is compared to what? A beautiful boat which will take the soul across this. It's very symbolic, you know. We are all under that same delusion. Each one of us trying to go. But the only problem that comes is that unless we have taken a vow, I want to cross this ocean of bondage, samsara, it is not going to be possible. First of all, we cannot cross by ourselves. We need a boat, and more important, we need a boatsman who can safely ferry us across. Do you know what is the boat? The instructions given by the teacher, and the instructions he doesn't give out of himself. He gives based upon the scriptures. That is why Shruti, Yukti and Anubhava. This is the scripture must tally, and my guru's experience also must tally. Then my experience must be the same experience. Then only it is a genuine experience. A beautiful idea, which I will not dwell today. The idea is, all of us are what is called a huge delusion has come. It is a deluge, but in the form of delusion. What is this delusion? This body, mind is real. Therefore, everything experienced through the body, mind is absolutely real. And then a time will come when we don't see any other way. We have to die and we have to become reformed. We have to regenerate. This idea is beautifully put by Jesus Christ. A man asks, how can I attain the kingdom of heaven? I think most of you know it. What was the answer? Unless a man dies, he cannot attain the kingdom of heaven. What does he mean? Simply, I commit suicide and I reach the kingdom of heaven. No, what he means is, you have to die to your nature, ignorant nature, and you have to become a new soul in the form of knowledge, body of knowledge. That's what it really means. But very few people understand. Jesus tells very so-called cryptic things like that, difficult things. Unless a person becomes a child, he cannot enter into the kingdom of heaven. So an 80-year-old man, he says, how can I become a child? Not physical transformation, it is become a child of God, a child of the divine, child of divine mother. Then only you can enter. Otherwise, no. That is why a teacher is necessary to reinterpret what is the exact symbolism of these scriptures, scriptural statements. The essence of all mythologies is that man is a degeneration of what he was. That means all of us who are not realized, we are all degenerated. But degeneration doesn't allow us to remain as we are. There is something within that forces us to move forward. That is the goal of life. What is it? Simply to become what we really are. Now, come Swamiji was talking in the West. And at that time, science is on the rise. And there are so many scientists. Unfortunately, what happened? The scientists believed that there is no need for God. God can safely retire. Remember, old joke, scientists have decided, now we are masters of this universe, we have so much of knowledge, and now we can retire God. Honorary professor, you know, they decided to let God know out of respect. It is not necessary to take a decision without his information, informing him, let us inform. So they made an appointment, one-to-one, and they met God. And God asked, what did you want to discuss with me? They said, no, we don't want to discuss. We have come to respectfully suggest to you, you take retirement, honorary retirement. God said, how come? Said, you know, you are respected, revered, worshipped because you created life. Now we also could create life. God said, okay, show me. And they scooped some dust. God said, no, not my dust. Bring your own dust. Even the greatest scientists, even if they could take, they are recreating out of DNA, etc. already. But it is already potentially life is there. What nature has taken billions of years, a scientist hastens that process. He's not doing anything new about it. After all, first, according to science, the whole thing was inorganic matter. Slowly conditions changed. Warmth had come, fire had come, heat has come, water was there. So inorganic had turned into very simple celled microorganisms. And from there, slowly evolution has started. This is the idea behind what? The idea of evolution. What is evolution? Slowly this organic matter, simple organic matter, very simple one-celled organic molecules, molluscule, is slowly evolved into what we are now. This is the idea. Without accepting the idea, being extremely unscientific, how could a dust particle turn into such intelligent human being? Is it ever possible? Science says, no, we don't need any God or spirituality or anything. So it is just evolving. What is evolving? Nature is evolving. And Swamiji, talking more than 100 years back here, he is directly smashing that so-called unscientific theory, which was blindly accepted by many as a scientific theory. What is it? Man can evolve, or any molecule can evolve into the highest intelligent conscious human being, without having as a seed, without having that consciousness as a seed. Let me read. Coming to the present times, modern research seems to repudiate this position absolutely. What is it? Evolutionists seem to contradict entirely this assertion. According to them, man is the evolution of the mollusk, and therefore, what mythology states cannot be true. Don't forget. What does the mythology say? Man is the degeneration of what he truly is. Man is a degeneration of, in simple words, God, Atman. They are not admitting that. Atman means here consciousness. Consciousness means intelligent, rational capacity to think. It is the consciousness that degenerates into thought. That's all. And therefore, what mythology states cannot be true. There is in India, however, a mythology which is able to reconcile both these positions. The position of the scientist which says the non-conscious mollusk is evolving into a fully conscious being. The other side, which is mythology, which says man is a degeneration of God and he is going back. Now there is a conflict between these two. Can it be reconciled? Yes. Reconciled through Hindu mythology. What is it? The Indian mythology has a theory of cycles, that all progression is in the form of waves. Beautiful idea. God slowly degenerates into inorganic matter. And this inorganic matter again goes up and reaches until it doesn't stop until it reaches God. Again, God degenerates. Again, this degeneration of God again regenerates. That process by which God degenerates or becomes gross, subtle, then gross and grossest, that process is called involution. And again, this grossest mollusk, which is again evolving, and that idea is called evolution. Involution and evolution is constantly going on and it will never come to an end. Let me introduce you to this beautiful idea. When did creation start? Hindu Vedantic answer. The creation has not started at a particular time. It is eternal. Srishti is eternal. Creation and then again dissolution. Again creation. So, this idea, cyclic idea, it is, we call it kalpa. You know, we all know about it, but still I am reminding. We call it, in my last class, I have brought up that idea. Time is divided into four parts. The age of truth, Satya Yuga, Trita Yuga, Dwapara Yuga and Kali Yuga. This is called Kali Yuga, the iron age. What happens? Again, the age of truth starts. And then again, it degenerates. And again, it regenerates. Again, degenerate. How long will it go on? It will go on eternally. Then you have to understand, I am part of that process. Eternally, I am going on and on, being reborn and degenerated and regenerated. So, what is the point of all this spiritual practice and all those things? Anyway, it is going to happen automatically, cyclically, naturally, without my least effort. Then why should I do all those things? The idea is, collectively, that's what happens. Individually, we become liberated. This is a teaching given to the lowest class, not to the highest class. Do you know what is the teaching given? You have never become jiva. You are thinking you have become. It is all your thinking. Have you heard that joke? Nice joke. Yes, there were two brothers. And the elder brother had taken ill. And a doctor was called in. The doctor came, examined the man, and he declared, there is absolutely nothing wrong with this man. He thinks he is ill. That's all. And he went away. 6 months passed, and the doctor and the younger brother met in the street. Then the doctor remembered, I went and then diagnosed this man's brother. He asked, how is your brother? Oh, he thinks he is dead. So, this is Advaita Vedanta. You think that you are bound. You think you are a human being. You think you are not God. Did you really degenerate? Can you really degenerate? The whole teachings of Swami Vivekananda is this. No, you cannot degenerate. Because that which can degenerate is called change. That which is changeful can never become unchanging. And that which is unchanging can never become changing. The infinite cannot become finite. The finite cannot become infinite. If any time you have degenerated into a human being, there is no chance for you, because the beautiful rational argument is, once you degenerated, what prevents you from degenerating a billion times more? Do you get what I am talking about? You are God. This is what Vedanta teaches us. Lower Vedanta, not higher Vedanta. What Vedanta teaches? You are divine. You are soul immortal, and for some reason, you have become degenerated. Okay, it's wonderful teaching. So how can I go back to my real nature? You take initiation from me and worship my feet, and then I will give you, show you. Otherwise, it is not given. The teaching is not given. Not free. Free for you after you take initiation and offer me a lot of things. Okay, sir. I am an intelligent person. I want to ask you one more question. Okay, I will follow you. And somehow again liberation. What prevents me again from falling down? That means every time I have to take initiation from you and then practice spiritual disciplines. Go up, fall down, go up, fall down. How long? Eternally. Is it acceptable? Not acceptable at all. What is the solution then? The solution is you are never degenerated. And Vedanta gives an example. You know, you have a dream. You are in your own home, in your own bed, after nicely taking dinner, you go to bed, you dream, somebody dragged you into a horrible dungeon and beating you black and blue. And at that time, what is your thought? If somebody comes, he visits you and then tells you, no, you are not in a dungeon, nobody is beating you are a very great man. Are you likely to believe me? No, you will not believe me. But as soon as you wake up, what do you find? That you have never been in a dungeon. You have never at all suffered. It is all in the mind. So, the entire gamut of Indian spirituality has only one thing as its essence. Do you know what it is? You are not going to become something different. You are already what you want to become, but you are going to change your mind. To put it in simpler words, you have an impure mind. An impure mind makes you think that you are not a happy person, you are a suffering person, and you make it pure, some means. By becoming pure, you do not become what you thought you were not, but you know, I forgot who I am, now I remember what I am. This beautiful idea has been presented as the very essence of Bhagavad Gita, at the very end of Bhagavad Gita. Lord Krishna asks one question of Arjuna. Says, did you listen to my talk attentively with devotion and with faith? Arjuna, and if you had listened, the result would be absolutely now and immediate. Here and immediate. Arjuna categorically replied. What does he say? Nasto mohaha. My delusion is gone, destroyed. The next word is the most crucial word in the whole literature of Indian spiritual scriptures. Smritihi labdhaha. I obtained my memory. What is the memory? Memory that I am like this. I forgot I am so and so. That is called losing the memory. Now my memory has come back. So I have not become what I was not. I have not become somebody else and now became what I was. I was thinking I was somebody else. That is the crucial meaning, symbolism of Indian spiritual sadhana. Spiritual practice is not to give us something new, but to remind us who we really are. This is a great teaching in the whole world. Whereas many religions, especially at the time of Swami Vivekananda, even today, what do they teach? You are not God, but through God's grace, if you live a good life, holy life, spiritual life, you are going to become a spiritual person. You are not, but you will become. In contrast, the Vedanta teaches, you are a spiritual person, temporarily you have forgotten and you are going to regain it. This is the greatest difference. And that's what Swamiji is telling scientifically, he is trying to explain it. Let us explore this one. Scientific view, idea of involution. Certainly, Swamiji's words, certainly it is true, even on the grounds of modern research, that man cannot be simply an evolution. Every evolution presupposes an involution. The modern scientific man will tell you that you can only get the amount of energy out of a machine which you have previously put into it. Something cannot be produced out of nothing. This is the greatest scientific truth. Something cannot be produced out of nothing. Something can be produced only out of something. If a man is an evolution of the mollusk, Swamiji's scientific, rational argument, then the perfect man, the Buddha man, the Christ man, was already involved in the mollusk. That's why Swamiji's formulation of this greatest teaching, each soul is potentially divine. If this is not so, whence come these gigantic personalities? Something cannot come out of nothing. Thus we are in the position of reconciling the scriptures with modern light. That energy, which manifests itself slowly through various stages until it becomes the perfect man, it cannot come out of nothing. That means it is already involved there. It is in a potential stage. So what is spiritual practice? Is nothing but evolving towards our own true nature. That means removing the obstacles. This is a very important teaching again in Vedanta. Swamiji also quotes in Patanjali Yoga Sutras. Let me remind you what it is. There is a philosophy called Sankhya. And according to Sankhya, the soul who is bound in the Prakriti, the bondage is because the soul thinks I am nature, inert nature, and the inert nature thinks I am the conscious soul. This is in simple the philosophy of Sankhya. Patanjali Yoga Sutra is a branch of that philosophy, another version of philosophy which is practical. What it says is, through the practice of yoga, you will separate yourself that no, I am not the inert nature, I am fully conscious Purusha. Consciousness, another name is Purusha. I am Purusha. I am not Prakriti. What does yoga do? It doesn't give you anything. It simply separates you from this mixture. And it was not real mixture. It is only assumed mixture, believed mixture. In that context, what Swamiji gives an example. Here is a farmer. The example, the analogy is called Kshetrikavat. Here is a farmer. He has a field. The field needed water. And here is a big river flowing at some distance. Now, the water of that river needs to be brought to this field. What does the farmer do? What will you do? You just dig a channel. That means, as soon as you dig a channel, the water of the river automatically flows into the field. What is the idea here? The farmer did not produce the water. The water is already there. But what did he do by digging the channel? He removed merely the obstruction between the river and the field. So, what is the meaning of this as applicable to our talk? What is spiritual practice? It is like digging a channel. God is the big river and we are the fields. So we are called Kshetra. And God is called Kshetrajna. Through practice, you make a connection. That connection has a symbolic name called yoga. Karma yoga means what? Getting connected to God through the practice of karma. Bhakti yoga means getting connected with devotion to God. Raja yoga means getting connected through meditation to God. Jnana yoga means getting connected to God through knowledge. In all these cases, you are not creating anything new. You are just removing ignorance. What is it? The obstruction? Only one obstruction. What is it? Our thought. What is the thought? I am not God. Simply, you don't remove I am not. Only one word you need to remove. I am not God. Remove only one word. Not. An atheist pronounced a pontifical statement. God is nowhere. And a Ramakrishna Mission Swami, he said, you are absolutely right, but you don't know in grammar, English grammar. God is now here. Beautiful. This is an important idea. This is what Swamiji is going to tell to us. What is evolution? Removing the obstacle so that we know who we really are. The next idea, again from the scientific thought of those days, probably even today. Even today, a big confused discussion is going on. What is the relationship between mind and consciousness? This science, this particular subject, does mind manufacture consciousness or does consciousness manufacture body-mind? This was the great discussion. Even today, a lot of confusion is going on. Why is it so very important? If the scientists are real, that means as soon as our brain stops functioning, we are nobody. But according to Vedanta, even if the body dies, even if the mind doesn't function, even if you are in a comatic state, unconscious state, the consciousness is there, will be there, it will work. But the only problem is, there is no medium through which to express it. That means what? Of enormous significance. You know what is the significance? Here is a person, whole life, he had practiced austerities, thought nothing else but God. Suddenly you find him, he meets an accident and he goes into a comatic state. What happens to all the spiritual knowledge that person had gained? Does it simply disappear? According to Hinduism, there are a lot of advantages are there. It means, for example, you know, here is a baby, and as soon as the baby is 2 years, 3 years old, he starts singing or composing beautiful songs, etc., or playing tabla. You can always see. How did this baby get it? No science can explain it. But Hindus say he was in having this knowledge in his previous births and that body instrument came to an end. Now as soon as he got a new instrument, he started manifesting his potentiality. So we can all see some people are more intelligent, Some people are more happy. Some people are even born with a diamond spoon. By very birth. What is the difference between one baby and the other baby? Enormous difference will be there. How do we explain it? That here is a child born in the streets, slum areas, and absolutely no hope for life. Here is another born in royal family. If you accept scientific view, that means there is no justice and there is no reason. Anything can happen to anybody, anywhere. Whereas the theory of Vedanta says, nothing happens unless you earn it. You earn in you through your past life actions, and that's what you get it. But the hopeful message is, however horrible your present status is, there is going to come a state when you are going no less than being equal to God. I am God. That is the whole gist of what Swamiji is telling. Now continuing, there is a argument there. Whether body manufactures soul or soul manufactures body. Soul means Atma. Here is what Swamiji says. There is a great discussion going on as to whether the aggregate of materials we call the body is the cause of manifestation of the force we call the soul, thought, etc., or whether it is the thought that manifests this body. The religions of the world, of course, hold that the force called thought manifests the body and not the reverse. There are schools of modern thought which hold that what we call thought is simply the outcome of the adjustment of the parts of the machine which we call body. Let me summarize this particular situation. Many scientists who understand this theory of evolution, what they say is, what we call thought, what we call mind, what we call consciousness, awareness, is the result which they call epiphenomena. Means there is a body, as the body is evolving, it somehow brings out this thing called the capacity to reason, capacity to think, capacity to feel, capacity to be aware, etc. Two theories. From the religious point of view, first there is God and He created this world. From the other point of view, forget about God. Slowly, this unconscious matter is slowly evolving, and in course of evolution, somehow it develops the capacity to think, to feel, and to be aware. Swamiji brings up that idea. Even today there is much has not changed. That is why you call this book called God Delusion. What does it say? God is a delusion. We call him deluded person. Then who made all this world? Nature. So if you are a scientist, then answer this question. If man is exhibiting the highest manifestation of consciousness, where from did it come? Suddenly did it come accidentally and infuse itself into the human body and brain, and suddenly he became what he is now? Or he was having that consciousness as a potential form, and in course of time, when the time is right, when the instrument is ready, the thought or the consciousness is manifesting itself. Now, another very important distinction is, the modern science has not been able to distinguish between thought and awareness. Whereas we discussed in the Patanjali Yoga Sutras, every single thought that arises, it is a combination of two. Consciousness plus what we call a thought. Now, I will stop this class with one simple statement. How do you know there is a thought in your mind? That means you must be aware that is a thought. Now, another statement. Can you imagine a thought without awareness? Will you know that there is a thought unless you are aware? When you are unconscious, will you be aware that there are so many thoughts in your mind? When you are in deep sleep, will you know that so many thoughts are going on? Even if there are thoughts, there will be no thoughts. But even if there are so many thoughts, will you be aware of that? And if you are not aware, will it be a thought? Now this is thought of the day. We will discuss it in our next class. Om Shanti, Shanti, Shanti.